talking about me, Bill Buckmaster. Hello, everybody. Off and running on the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Tom Fairbanks, my engineer producer. Tom, it's unusual to have 30 degree upper 30s for the overnight lows this late into the year. I mean, after all, it's springtime. I do see an 80 popping up maybe next week. We're a little behind the curve, aren't we?
A little bit. And
I'll take it.
But, you know, yeah, I'll take it. Compared to what other people have been putting up with.
Yeah, and we know what's headed for us, right? Yeah, very, very warm temperatures soon. It's the 13th year of the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from the KVOI.com. The Buckmaster Show live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Without further ado, let's go now to the live line and Pima County Board of Supervisors Chair Atalita Grijalva, Democrat representing the District 5 on the board. Atalita, how are you today?
I'm good, Bill. How are you?
Doing well. What are you getting a little spring break in, huh?
We are. This is my son's 12th birthday, so his birthday wish was to come to Disneyland, so we did that for about 15 hours yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, 15. We were there from opening to almost the very end.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It
was fun.
Must be a little sore from all that walking.
It was really fun. I think we hit nearly every ride, which apparently was the goal. So,
yep. Well, yeah, that was accomplished.
And we're hanging out. Yeah, we're hanging out with family, so it's a good break. And
all right. Before we move on to my stack of Pima County stuff, I've got to begin today because you did serve 20 years on the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board, and I think 4 times as the chair. Is that right? 4 or 5?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just heard on the CBS Network News, 2,500 books have been banned in school libraries across the United States. That was the figure for the 12-month period ending in 2022. That's the most in 2 decades. And here in Arizona, there's now kind of a robust move to do some book banning as well. Some of your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm completely opposed to that. I do think that in K-12 systems, books should be appropriate for the ages that you're serving. So high school might have books that are a little different than elementary, and that totally makes sense. But being able to give young people access to books and experiences, the thing that I have seen from some constituents that came up is, opposed to having certain books that talk about transgender or homosexuality or families that don't look necessarily like the traditional mom, dad, and, 2.5 kids, that those are the books that are being targeted. And I'm completely opposed to that. I think that we need to provide young people opportunities to have discussions. And if, you're an active parent in your child's life, then you would be able to, have conversations about these things. But one of the laws that passed in the last legislative session was to require schools that have librarians to provide printouts to parents who request the information about what books their children are checking out. And that really you had access to before. So it's just it's a lot of pressure put on school campuses. Most of our campuses do not have, and this is statewide, do not have a librarian, certified librarian in their schools. They have library assistants. So a lot of that is just a lot of trying to impose a lot of pressure on schools that I think is ill-targeted.
Tom Horn is back. And during your time on the board, you interfaced with Mr. Horn. And now his signature piece, this what he calls the Empower Hotline, is now up and running, and it's a platform that promises to focus. Well, it declares war on conversations about emotions and identity. What are some of your thoughts about this hotline?
Yeah, I think it's just a sad waste of taxpayer money. It's an opportunity for someone who is not an educator in our K-12 systems. My understanding has never been, children are not in our public schools, to attack our public school system. And, you know, when we're coming out of COVID, when we see, as a member of the Board of Health, Pima County Board of Health, we've started a campaign that says you're not alone, because we're so concerned at the number of young people that are have expressed or attempted suicide, to sort of put up these additional kind of it's dog whistle for the most part. I mean, he's just trying to really provide some sort of support to people who are going to attack our schools, attack our educators. It discourages our educators from being true partners with parents and students and talking about things that might be bothering them, and discouraging counselors and social workers from having conversations that could save lives and help our young people do better in school and better in life. And I just think it's really sad.
It's one more reason for many young teachers perhaps to say, I don't want to get involved in teaching, at least in the public school system here in Arizona.
Yep, absolutely. This is on top of all of the other micromanaging bills that have come through trying to really discourage teachers from having those important conversations and encourage critical thinking. You don't have to agree with everything a teacher says. You can have debate about it. And I think that those conversations are incredibly healthy and were really beneficial to me throughout my education. I know that, I've had teachers that didn't have the same ideology that I do, don't think the same. And I think it reinforced my position and also made me think about some of their perspectives, and perhaps, you know, where it's helpful to at least understand where people are coming from. There's this level of intolerance right now that if we have a disagreement, if we don't agree on an issue, then I'm the enemy or you're the enemy. And that narrative is not doing well for our country in general. There's very much, you know, communities that are very siloed and not having these really important conversations about how do we start to compromise. There's not a willingness to do that right now, either in Arizona at the legislature and also at the federal level.
And we've seen that in the boardroom and the Pima County Board of Supervisors. We had Supervisor Hines, Dr. Hines was on our show Monday, and he talked about, perhaps you saw the op-ed that he had in Sunday's Arizona Daily Star, about that, you know, civil discourse has really taken a back seat in the boardroom and the call to audience.
It really has. And I keep trying to encourage people to, you know, we have a crowd of people that are standing behind the podium. And so when someone comes up to speak, if they speak on something that you don't agree with, I can audibly hear people making comments. And it is an environment that is very uncomfortable, could be very stressful, very threatening for people who are coming in to speak on an issue that perhaps the majority of people who've decided to take out, their Tuesday morning through Tuesday afternoon to sit there for the board meetings, it can be very intimidating. So as someone who really encourages people to come and speak, I don't have to necessarily agree with your position in order to hear it, but please be tolerant and polite enough to let other people express their opinions, whether you agree with it or not. And that's just something that isn't happening right now. It is a very toxic environment. I try to encourage people to come to call to the audience if they have a concern, but you know, if they watch a meeting, they're less likely to want to do that. And so yeah. it's been a real struggle, unfortunately.
Yeah, and school kids come with the parents, and they come as part of groups, and then the educators may think twice about bringing the kids into what, as you described, a toxic environment.
Right. And that's really what, I mean, since I became chair and having had my experience in TUSD, having young people come and, you know, we have people with reading land acknowledgments that have dedicated over, you know, three decades to Pima County. There's an opportunity to celebrate the really wonderful things in our community. And we're just going to continue to attempt to do that. I know Supervisor Scott has really reached out to the schools in his district. I encouraged every supervisor to do that because we'd like to showcase the amazing young people and talent that we have here in Pima County. And I'm just going to continue to do that and hope that, you know, if nothing else, there is a little bit of a balance, a little more tolerance and civility. But thus far, it's been challenging.
And have you set any new ground rules, or is it pretty much still the same?
Actually, I'm using the outline that was passed in 1995 and revised in 2020 to include a couple of COVID sort of changes. But the language for call to the audience has been fairly, I mean, I didn't make it up. And so it literally says there, you know, no slanderous or impertinent remarks. That's a script that was very similar to state law that we read in TUSD. And so we've had a couple of people that have, you know, we've had to stop a meeting once. We had somebody who received a letter from our legal counsel essentially telling them that they wouldn't be able to come back for a number of months because, you know, you can't say slanderous things in a public meeting. You can't run into, you know, there's this conversation about, you know, we should have free speech and you're not allowing me my freedom of speech, but you can't run into a movie theater and yell fire. You know, you can't, and there's some of the behaviors and language that is being used in our county, you know, boardroom. You couldn't do that at the state legislature.
That's right.
Security would escort you out immediately. You couldn't say those things at the federal level. So why? Because we're at the local level where we have more people that come that are really impacted by those decisions. Is it acceptable to do that? And as, you know, in a person who's been in elected office for 20 years, if you disagree with a decision that I've made, I encourage you to come. I mean, I've had people say some pretty horrible things that I don't know they would necessarily be proud if their families heard them say, or maybe their children or grandchildren say, but I will sit there as long as you're not being slanderous. I mean, I don't have to agree with your decision, but at least I can understand the perspective. But there's just some things that have been said that are just completely unacceptable, and we have to draw the line.
Adelita, why don't we talk about something everybody agrees on? And well, I think just about everybody likes bakery goods and have a sweet tooth, and I know I do. Let's talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. I'm very much into the croissants right now, Adelita. Do you like chocolate croissants or what? What about that?
I do like a croissant with like in a sandwich. So those are delicious.
Sure.
I know.
Yeah.
More the savory.
Yeah, and they do that up at Mona's. They put egg in there and make it like a breakfast croissant.
Nice.
And yeah, right out of the oven, very fresh croissant. So Mona's Danish Bakery, they're open at 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Saturday. Sunday, 7 o'clock, they open. Get there early for the best selection. Their website looks really good. The new photographs of pretty much everything on the menu. I think they've got everything on the menu there. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. We'll have more on our live line with Adelita Grijalva, the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, right after this break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview focuses on the most important issue, I think, facing Arizona, water. John Kamik, who is the director of Tucson Water, returns to the program. He was with us about 3 months ago, and so much has been happening on the Colorado River. And we're going to talk with him about what's the impact for us here in Southern Arizona and through Tucson Water. But right now, we continue with our conversation with Adelita Grijalva, the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Yesterday, Adelita, we had Suzanne Drewby with us. She gave us a very interesting look at assessed valuations. Suzanne is the Pima County assessor, and I must say she is very open to anybody that calls the office. A live human, a live person will answer the phone if you call the Pima County Assessor's Office. And I praised her for that yesterday, because these days that's very unusual. You have to go through that full menu and this and that. But anyway, somebody answers, and they are very open to if people want to dispute their assessed values. But anyway, kind of the takeaway message, these values have skyrocketed, Adelita.
They have. Yeah. And she was really kind to sort of send me a message and the press release when all of these evaluations were going out because she said, you know, just in case someone calls, here's our contact information. So I have appreciated that.
So with these values going up, I know that you and the board are limited. If it comes to a tax increase, I think you're capped that you couldn't go more than like a 5% tax increase. But are we looking at some kind of a tax increase, or are you going to try to avoid that at all costs?
Thus far, I mean, I think we're going to avoid that as much as possible. Thus far, we haven't had a conversation about what this budget process is going to look like and if we're going to be facing any really tough decisions. I do anticipate that we will, because we have received an influx of federal funding over the last almost three years that will be obviously tapering off. And there are a lot of programs that have been started and really beneficial for Pima County. So we may have to make some decisions about what we're going to invest in from the general fund and other funds. There's still going to be some grants available, but they obviously won't have the same kind of impact to our budget.
And the federal money, so much of the federal money is going away, isn't it, for the next fiscal year?
It is. But we're going to see an increase in grants. And so we'll see some more from the state, and we'll see some from the feds targeting specific programs that have really shown some benefit. And so we still might be able to see grants for the health department. We received some grants to, you know, flesh out different programs and planning of different transportation initiatives. And that was something that the county just received a grant to do that. And that was essentially a planning grant. And Secretary Buttigieg actually called me and said, congratulations. And so that was really great for our county. And we're going to continue to rely on those kind of partnerships with our cities, other municipalities and nonprofits in order to draw in as much of this grant funding that will be available as possible.
Let's talk quickly about, since I have not talked with you in at least a month or so, Pima County is opening a new site for migrant services. Is this going to be adequate?
Well, we're hoping it will be. Depending on what some of the projections are, it was very clear that the facility that we had available, it's not going to provide the capacity that we need. And so what Pima County was doing is we were renting out hotels, similar to what the city's doing for, you know, our houseless populations. We were doing that for our immigrant populations and asylum seekers, essentially. And what we received direction from is that the federal government would rather have all of the services under one umbrella. So they didn't want to fund the facility that Casalitas has over at the, you know, juvenile detention facility off of Ajo. We have that facility, but they didn't want to also rent out spaces at different hotels. And what we know is many of the asylum seekers are coming from Guatemala. Tucson is not their ultimate destination. This is not the end point. And so many times they're in our communities for 2 to 3 days, but we do need the support of arranging travel, airline, you know, contacting family, those kind of services. And all of that had to be housed in a certain location. So the facility that is being rented right near Desert Vista, mm-hmm, we rented it for 6 months with an additional potential 6 months. And they said it should be available by the end of March.
When do you think we'll hear something about the blue ribbon panel that's been created about the jail? Have they begun their work, Adelita?
They have begun their work, and we were assured that we would get updates. And then, I mean, it's a very short window of time that we really want to get some information back. And so it was a 60 to 90 day window. So they have already started a lot of that discussion about the structure of the facility, really looking at like having engineers kind of assess what is going on there. Because when we went through the tour, our office did, and I think every other supervisorial office has had an opportunity to go through and look at the condition of the current facility. I was really surprised because the part of one part of the facility is 40 years old. The other is 16 years old, which is, for construction, fairly young. And when you look at some of the damage, water damage that has seeped through the walls, and there, I just wanted to understand whether that was a lack of maintenance or it was something that was really structurally wrong with either the materials or, you know, something that's behind the walls that is causing the kind of problems that they're seeing there.
Did you say 16 years? That isn't very old for sure.
Well, that's what, I mean, having been on the TUSD board where I walked through facilities who are 100 years old, that is really, you know, young. 16 years is a fairly young facility to have, you know, the kind of electrical problems, circulatory problems. It just really surprised me at how the condition of it. And, you know, the jail has their own facilities management, and then the county has, you know, obviously provides the support because it's a county building. But depending on who the sheriff has been, some of those changes have been made. Either they have their own facilities person that is housed out of the sheriff's department, or it's someone that's in coordination with what's being done for all of the county facilities. But there clearly has been some concerns there. And
right.
I've heard it from people that work there. Yep.
All right. Adelita Grijalva, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your time over in Southern California. Thanks.
Will do. Thank you.
All right. We'll take a break right here. Will Humble is next on The Buckmaster Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, a Thursday edition. This portion presented by our friends in, well, over at Green Things. We love Green Things, and what a perfect time of year to do some spring gardening. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Beautiful 13-acre site, everything you need for your spring gardening. And if you have any questions, they have a very knowledgeable staff there that will point you in the right direction. GreenThingsAZ.com. Their sister business is ZocaloVillage.com. Open daily in their 53rd year of business. Let's go now on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management, the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. More than 30 years in public health, including more than two decades at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various capacities, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. It's Will Humble, who is our contributor on public health and is with us every month here on the show. Will, how is your month going so far?
Oh, good afternoon, Bill and listeners. Everything's going pretty well up here in Phoenix.
This would not be a session with Will Humble if there was not a COVID question. Why don't I get it out of the way off the top, that there is a lot of concern and confusion about the origin of the COVID-19 virus. Did it originate from a Japanese lab leak? The experts at the University of Arizona say that theory still is not credible at this point. I'm just curious what your take is, Will.
Well, my take is that we don't have all the evidence yet, but it's coming soon. And the reason I say that is first of all, the Chinese government has not been super cooperative in giving the researchers all the access to the places that they need to get to.
And I said Japanese lab. I'm sorry. Chinese lab, of course.
Right. I knew what you meant. The listeners did too. So we don't have the government, the Chinese government there hasn't been as cooperative as they could have been. And so we're missing some data that way. But the researchers like Dr. Warabi and others that have been doing the origin research have had access to like scientific data, epidemiology data, geographic mapping and so forth, but they have not had access to the intelligence information from the FBI and other parts of the U.S. government. So President Biden last week signed a bill that was bipartisan, passed the House and Senate, that's going to declassify the information that the intelligence agencies have about the origin of the virus. So as some of your listeners will remember, the FBI believes that the preponderance of the evidence is towards a lab leak, whereas the scientists and researchers at universities and so forth say that the data is pointing towards a jump from wildlife to humans. But they've been the data sets have been isolated. The intelligence data has not been shared. So I think by the time we talk in, let's say, our July, we do this once a month. By the time we talk in July or August, then we should have both the epidemiology laboratory data, but also the intelligence data to put the two pieces of the puzzle together and maybe get closer to an answer.
Let's talk a little bit about firearms. This firearm violence in Arizona. This was a report. I think it's over 100 pages long. You were blogging about it. Will, why don't we talk about some of the key points of this? This is a really important topic.
Yeah, so this is from our organization, the Arizona Public Health Association, and we did a deep dive into the epidemiology of firearm violence. And so we looked, which hasn't been done by the state health department or anyone as far as I know in the last 20 years. So we got all the data sources we could find and looked at homicides, suicides, shootings by police, school shootings, accidents and injuries, and put it all together in a single report to help. And importantly, towards the end of the report, we identify the evidence-based interventions that are effective at each of those different categories. And so, there are laws and policies we could pass that would help on different pieces of that, but it's different policies for different kinds of problems. So interventions that focus on suicide, for example, are very different from those that focus on domestic violence or homicide or even school and police shootings. So we put all that report together in hopes that we start a dialogue among our elected officials to start thinking through what some of the interventions are that are out there that we can all agree on to implement at the state level to do something about firearm injuries and violence and deaths in Arizona. I mean, one statistic that might surprise some of your listeners is that the number three cause of death among kids in Arizona is our firearm deaths, homicides and suicides. So it's a big public health problem. And the other thing that I think is striking on the report, and listeners can go to azpha.org and find it on our homepage. The other thing that's interesting, if you look at the data as a whole, every single category is getting worse. And we adjust it by population, so we're looking at rates. But no matter what category you think you look at, homicides, suicides, police shootings, school shootings, every single one of those categories is getting worse in Arizona.
You know, I was just thinking that if you asked kind of the man or woman on the street, what do you consider the top public health issue, or even give me your top three public health, people wouldn't necessarily, I'm making a judgment here, but I would guess that folks would not necessarily think of firearms.
No, probably not. You know, that's not part of our study. We didn't do that part of it. It was just really an evidence review of the epidemiology. But, I think some folks who have experienced it personally and it's happened in their personal lives might, you know, I think it comes more to your mind if you have a more personal experience with firearm violence. And by the way, firearm violence for us in our report includes suicides as well, not just homicides.
How does this fit in with this? There was some executive order from the White House concerning this topic, Will.
Yeah, so the executive order, President Biden a couple of weeks ago signed an executive order, and that executive order didn't do anything new. In other words, he has to act within the authority that he's given by Congress. But if you recall, last year there was a bipartisan firearms bill that passed through the Congress, and what President Biden's executive order does is order, let's say, the Department of Health and Human Services, Homeland Security, and some of the other federal agencies to ensure that they're coordinating the implementation of that new law.
Okay. All right. Before we change topics here, this would probably be a good time to take a break, because I do want to talk about kids and vaccination rates. There's some very interesting information coming out about that. Will Humble, stick around. We've got more with you after we take the break on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. all made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. You know, this is a perfect time of year to get away over to that area. Do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Things looking real good, greened up after the winter rains and some spring rains like we had this yesterday, for sure, here in Tucson. So things are looking good over there. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org, and there you will find all sorts of tempting recreation ideas, some very tempting places to stay as well, really some nice places in that area and some great places to dine as well. southwestnewmexico.org. Once a month, our contributor on public health joins us, Will Humble, former Arizona Director of Health and now the pretty much heads up the Arizona Public Health Association. And their blog and their website, by the way, is azpha.org, and that's where Will does his blogging. Will, I want to ask you, we are kind of wrapping up flu season here. What are you hearing? Or maybe we're not wrapping it up. Has this been a rather middle of the road season, or how would you characterize it?
No, it was a pretty fierce influenza and RSV, especially RSV season, but it was so long ago, I think people kind of forgot. We had our big spike in cases back in November and December, and a little bit in January, but it's leveled off a lot. So not much influenza circulating right now. RSV is finally, you know, settled down a bit. And of course, COVID is in its interim period. It's going to come back this summer again. But all three of those are low right now. Of course, there's other bugs going around, as listeners will know. Colds, and I got a cold actually myself right now. But in terms of influenza, it was a early season, and it was a spiked season. It was a lot of people getting sick, but it's pretty much over now.
You know, people do, they get colds. You've got a cold right now. And there is confusion if people have COVID or a cold. Can you usually tell? Can people tell, do you think?
The only way to really tell is to use one of those tests that, you know, most people have in their bathrooms or closets and stuff. That's really the only way to tell.
Let's talk about vaccinations for the kids. I understand there's been a decrease. Why is that happening?
Yeah, so we've seen over the last several years a decrease in the number of kids that are fully vaccinated, and you know, we have a data collection system with all the public schools that collect the information about how many kids are exempt from vaccines for medical and personal exemptions and so forth. And the number of kids that are not vaccinated continues to increase year after year. In other words, our vaccination rates keep lowering. And the conventional wisdom over the last few years has been that it's been, you know, this vaccine hesitancy or even anti-vaccine movement that's causing, you know, the rates to go down. But as we look deeper in the data, it's looking more and more like it might actually be that it's getting harder and harder for parents to find a place to get their kids vaccinated. And we can go into the reasons for that if you want. There's for privately insured kids who might have Blue Cross Blue Shield or one of the other big health plans, the parents have those plans. The network of places that you can get vaccinated is pretty robust. For Medicaid members, so parents who are enrolled in the Access program, our state Medicaid program, they have their insurance through Access. And what we've discovered is that fewer and fewer of the physicians that take Access insurance are a lot of them are basically dropping on what's called the Vaccines for Children program, which is run by the Arizona Department of Health Services. And if you, my former agency, and if you do a deep dive, it's looking more and more like overregulation of the doctors in that Vaccines for Children program, around wastage of vaccine and vaccine temperatures and so forth, is causing doctors to drop out of the Vaccine for Children program. And what we're discovering is that, in fact, it's not so much vaccine hesitancy and anti-vax movement among parents. It has more to do with the fact that it's getting harder and harder for parents to get their kids vaccinated because fewer doctors are participating in the Vaccine for Children program.
You know, I was reading about the history of the anti-vax movement, and I guess that history goes all the way back to pushback several centuries ago to smallpox. But in more recent times, after the issues, was it the Guillain-Barré issue that developed after some of the flu shots? That apparently is where the current anti-vax movement started up. Some of your thoughts, please.
So that's part of it, but there's also a folklore. I guess you could say that vaccines are somehow associated with autism, and that's absolutely not the case. It's been shown time and time and time again. But there are certain people that continue to monetize that narrative and continue to push that theory, and that's also a component. And quite honestly, I think there is a third component now in that for the first time in my career, there's a political element to vaccines now after COVID.
Yeah. You've talked in months past about the situation with the Arizona State Hospital. There is legislation moving forward. What's the update on that?
Yeah, so for folks that haven't heard about this issue before, real quickly, the Arizona Department of Health Services runs the Arizona State Hospital. It's a mental facility for folks that with a severe mental illness. They need, you know, intensive inpatient treatment. And the state health department runs that facility. The problem is they also are the regulator. So the state health department licenses the facility as well. And over the last few years, there have been a few suicides and one homicide within the Arizona State Hospital. And the State Department of Health Services licensing division has gone out and decided that there's no deficiencies. Well, I can tell you, I was in that job. Deficient practices are what leads to suicides and homicides. You know, those things don't happen if you're running the ship the way it's supposed to be run. And so a lot of us are concerned that, you know, that this fox watching the hen house problem is needs to really be addressed. And thankfully, Senator Gowin down there from Cochise County has run a bill for the second year in a row to separate the function. And so the state hospital would be run by an independent board, would still be regulated by the state health department, but this institutional conflict of interest would be gone. And the bill's all the way through the Senate. It's gone through all the committees in the House of Representatives, and it just needs to get a floor vote in the House of Rep. And then we can, then it goes to the governor's desk for a signature. So we're as much closer than we got last year to really separating this function. It's been something that I spent quite a bit of time on this legislative session. And it's because I'm one of the few persons in the state who's experienced this institutional conflict of interest firsthand.
You know, when someone serves on a state board or commission, you were just talking about the possibility of an independent governing board for the state hospital. Are those paid positions, Will Humble?
Depends on what the board or commission is. Some of those boards and commissions are reimbursement for travel and so forth. Some of them have during meetings, a stipend. And then some of the boards and commissions actually will, you know, pay actual money more than just reimbursement and travel and so forth for those boards and commissions. And I think your listeners might be surprised to know that in state government, there's more than 200 boards and commissions that you can serve on. And I've really encouraged people throughout my whole career to, if you've got an area of expertise or something that you're interested in, I encourage people to go to the governor's Office of Boards and Commissions and put your resume in there so that you'll have an opportunity to serve on one of these boards and commissions and share your talent with the people of Arizona.
Boy, I had no idea that's how it starts. You go to the governor's commission.
Office of Boards and Commissions. Huh. And it's az.gov, and everyone could just Google it and you find it right away. And there's a listing about, 200 different areas, anything from the arts. Some of it is overseeing medical professions. Some of it has to do with the humanities. Some of it's in the sciences, providing oversight for some of the agencies. Some has to do with people with developmental disabilities and services to them. So there's a wide range, and those are really important commissions because, some of them make actual decisions about policy, and some are really influential.
All right. Will Humble, always a pleasure, Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Again, their website, azpha.org. You can find all sorts of information there, including Will's blog. Will, I hope you feel better with that cold, and we'll talk to you next month. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right. That is going to do it for the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. On behalf of Tom on the other side of the glass and Bill, saying thanks for listening, back with you in about 23 hours. Have a great afternoon.